Hello and welcome to the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast, where we talk with nurses working at the intersection of health and environment. My name is Beth Shank, a registered nurse from Missoula, Montana, and hosting our podcast. Today, our guest is Dr. Jessica Kastner, a PhD prepared research nurse focusing on environmental and occupational exposures, specifically with respiratory health. Jessica, thank you so much for joining us today.
Beth, it's a real honor to be invited to speak with you. Thank you.
You bet. Tell us a bit about your nursing career and how you got to where you are right now and why you're interested in this topic.
Absolutely. So I have experience in home health nursing, was my first professional job in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. My husband was military, and so we moved frequently at the beginning of my career and started working in emergency nursing in South Dakota. I've had the pleasure to work as a nurse in 7 states and see a lot of the similar threads of concerns that create really good, broad research questions that aren't necessarily setting specific. I was first interested in environmental health. I think it goes back to early childhood. I like to say my soul is anchored on the shores of the Great Lakes. I grew up very close to Lake Michigan, next to a state park that had been created by a grassroots environmental effort to ensure that some of the sand mining wasn't going to interfere with the natural resource of the lovely dunes and beaches we had in the area. I went to nursing school in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and was working as a nursing assistant in the local hospitals there starting in 1995. I'm not sure if you're aware, in 1993, there was a major cryptosporidium outbreak that affected the water supply in Milwaukee. And so very early, even as a paraprofessional, as a nursing assistant, I became very aware of this environmental influence. I still had patients who were immunosuppressed, maybe they had cancer treatments, HIV, autoimmune disorders, whose lives were profoundly affected by the sequela from that outbreak. As I'd mentioned, we moved quite a bit across the country, and it opened my eyes to just how crucial the environment is as a determinant of health. That includes the work environment. My first emergency nursing job in South Dakota, my quality improvement initiative there was looking at how commonly accepted workplace violence was as part of the job as an emergency nurse. And so with the support of my management and some key people in the community, including the Rotary Club and the Emergency Nurses Association, we started to address this root cause of occupational stress and unhealthy work environment. When we lived in New Mexico, I lived in a community that actually had too much fluoride in the water. And so people who drank that tap water were at risk for having fluorosis. Their bones broke a little easier. Their teeth had some brown discoloration. Again, when I moved to Buffalo, New York and started practicing here, noticed quite a few of the chronic diseases in some unique patterns that were ultimately linked to some exposure, some legacy hazard waste exposure from the industrial history here, but also to some air polluting behavior. So my dissertation looked at multi-levels, this idea of how influential our environment is to our health. I was looking at a root cause of dissatisfaction that I learned to nursing work, which was the inability to get the work done, or errors of omission. But it's really lent itself as a method and a technique to exploring how different levels of environment affect our health.
Interesting. And you touch on a philosophical conundrum in the literature already, and that is the breadth of the term environment. I know that when I've done lit reviews to look at what do we mean by environment in nursing, it means everything outside of the patient, basically. And so by creating a healthy practice environment, which has been one of your focus areas, it sounds like, certainly that is an impact of environment. And yet also you're linking specifically to what we think of more traditionally in, quote, environmental health, which is toxicology, for instance. Exposures to, toxins, natural toxins and chemical toxicants. Have you struggled with that breadth of definition in some of your work in terms of environment? Where does it begin and end?
I absolutely embrace the systems thinking and the complexity of it. This is where I thrive, and enjoy trying to revise the socio-ecological model, as well as some of our pathways of causation that we think about as scientists. So what we have from the ambient, actually sort of the global environment now, to our ambient environment, to our indoor environments, or what we're exposed to in our workplace and our homes and sort of our area, to what we're exposed to personally. Then if you're thinking about how that creates a poor outcome, you have to have this somehow internalized, and how much of the body burden is internalized, and then the effect on the target tissue and different genetic predispositions. So I really enjoyed mathematically getting into the idea of multi-level models, because it's a way to computationally and in a research way represent what nurses have always known, and that's our idea of holistic. We've always been trained to think about all of these complex and interacting exposures or interacting determinants on our patient's health and on their family. And now, finally, the math has caught up what we've always been trained and known, and we can create sort of the empirical evidence to depict this and to study it and to understand it further.
Very interesting. Does this question make sense in regards to your comments right now regarding the multi-level models? One thing that I have found when I speak with practicing nurses or talk with nursing students is maybe not quite the flexibility that I think we need in jumping levels, kind of. So, in other words, get very focused on the patient right in front of us, or perhaps the tissue that we're really looking at. Thinking about. And then it's a little bit more difficult to place that into a social structure so that the social determinants of health are impact are appreciated. And then it's even harder to put that into a planetary or global structure. So thinking about large global level changes such as climate change or biodiversity loss or ocean acidification, those sorts of things. It's difficult to make that leap, I have found for folks. Do you have some wisdom on that?
I really appreciate this question and thank you. I suppose I've come at it that this, in my experience, has been a strength of practicing nurses and actually a fluid way of thinking in a systems way. Perhaps it goes back to how we're trained or how we're exposed within the discipline. But a good example is nurses all the time are giving discharge instructions to someone with, let's say, COPD. And while they understand what's happening in the lung and they understand the implications of smoking, nurses are really the expert often at trying to think beyond that to, okay, I've had a patient who has a lot of caloric needs. Is at serious risk for decompensating in the hospital stay, and they live alone. If I discharge them home to a place where there's no food in the fridge, despite this pathology, they don't have the energy to go to the store today. So I thought, that's that holistic, what's happening in that home environment that might not be directly linearly linked to the disease that's going to create another poor outcome. I've actually been incredibly proud of the nursing process and nursing thinking and problem solving, and find that we're actually a really forefront discipline in this type of nonlinear thinking that really gets to the heart of solving problems. I think sometimes we just need to frame it to bring out the person who we're talking to their specific experience.
Thank you. That was really well said. I agree with you, especially in the scientific literature. If we think back to Dr. Patricia Butterfield's seminal paper of 1990 about upstream thinking, and how far ahead she was really of this language, which in just the past maybe 5 years is starting to be a very common way of thinking about it. And it makes so much sense to nurses, I think. And as you say, it's because of the way we're trained. It's because of our legacy. It's because there's a certain acceptance of complexity. We're not expecting that. No, it's only cellular. That's where health begins and ends. It is really this multi-layered conception. So thank you for making that so clear. And I look forward to reading more about your work, but it sounds very apropos and also supportive of this phenomenal profession that sits at the intersection of so much. You know, that's one of the things that I end up thinking about environment and health. So that brings me to this question. What would you say to that proposition that nurses are in an ideal position to talk about environment and health?
Well, I'm going to go back and just comment on something that you had said about the cellular level. I really value and interact with bench scientists on a routine basis as often as I can. I enjoy it very much. And even that is a way of informing one another. Was looking at a molecular pathway, and the first thing that came to my mind was, this looks like a social network. And that had some uptake in their language of actually what we see in human behavior and the ways that we interact and influence one another can help to sort of explain how these different cytokines and signaling pathways, it gives insight to that. So across the different levels. But if I could ask you to reframe the last question again, please.
I wanted to just get your perspective on your thoughts on nurses being ideal, perhaps, or perhaps not, participants in this conversation, really, about the intersection of health and environment.
Well, I think we've been at the forefront of it since the time of Florence Nightingale. You know, she was a huge proponent of changing the hospital environment and then changing the policy environment and influencing a lot of healthcare by taking data, analyzing it expertly, and then adding that personal story to it. I think that's a tremendous example. I think some of that history gets lost in some common gendered perceptions of, you know, nurses with soft skills and communication skills, which is very, very important. But, you know, I think we also have some expert research and scientific knowledge as well. So I think that in working through our very important organizations like Annie, in working through the academies, I know that they're taking really a forefront role on this idea of how are nurses influencing our own environments as well as the interdisciplinary environment. I also see a lot of nurses using their leadership skills to bring forward interdisciplinary teams. I'm seeing, I think, more success stories. I think that in some cases, the challenges are in the ability to value and highlight and communicate our own work. I also think that one potential barrier to advancing is because nurses are so used to being at the sharp end and this idea of if I don't do it, it doesn't get done. And a lot of us start in hospitals where sometimes that is true. You are the last line of defense to the patient. So if there's janitorial work that didn't get done, you need to do it so that there's lower risk of infection. Or if the phlebotomy didn't get done, you're the one who's doing it, and so on. I think that that can often translate into a diffusion of what we do extremely well and what we do very uniquely. And I really appreciate some of the newer theories that can help us put some words to that. I also think that our ethical contract with society is unlike very few other disciplines. And so that sort of trust that while we're very mindful of financial situations, we put research participants, patients, their health and needs first and foremost. So I think there are these ways that we bond together and make very important progress and can highlight our strengths. But I also think that history of being everything to everyone can diffuse what we're really best at. And then that sort of gets lost on this stage of advancing our priorities. Did I answer your question?
Beautifully. Thank you so much. I think that's great perspective and framing and a real reminder of both uniquenesses and strengths that nurses bring. You know, and it's interesting to me, I'm always wondering, are nurses born this way or are we, you know, quite effective in our education and enculturation? because it seems to be a persistent a feature. Do you see it that way?
I do. I think it's our cost effectiveness. So I'm going to speak to this on the research end. When I look at a research process from start to finish, proposal writing, research question development, theory development, for me, it's mostly quantitative analysis and writing everything up. I have had to develop every one of those skills expertly, entirely on my own because of, in some cases, shoestring funding, and be very productive and effective in answering those questions, translating it to the community, communicating to stakeholders. When I look at more well-resourced disciplines, there's more specialization, compartmentalization, because they have those resources to purchase the services of a statistician or of a contract research organization or of a communications manager. And so it has its strength and weakness. I think we get the job done. It's incredibly cost effective. But a real growth opportunity is that ability, I think, with more resources to that will grow to be specialized and to be able to sort of fit into this teamwork model where you don't have to do every piece of it. So it has its strengths and drawbacks, but at least to speak to where I am in my career, and in looking at sort of the administration of the research process, this idea of being everything to everyone does have that strength of being expert at every piece of the process, but there are definitely ways with more resources to do it more efficiently.
Great, thank you. I wondered if you would just to change track for a moment, I'd like to hear, if you're willing to talk about it, some detail about current or recent research that you've conducted, something that you're interested in and would be of interest to our listeners.
I would love to. So I'm going to start on the ambient environment level. I've been really fortunate to connect with some mathematicians and statisticians at Health Canada, and we just published a paper on these ambient air pollutants and respiratory emergency department visits. And so we were able to tease out some nuances in, stratified by gender to look at how the pattern appears different in men and women. And we also looked at upper respiratory infections. I've worked with this team. We've also looked at other population health outcomes related to eye infections, ear infections. So that's an exciting project, and it uses publicly available information. So these ambient health monitors did a similar project here in Erie County, New York, with asthma emergency department visits. So on the population level, looking, and these are observational studies, we're looking at the temporal patterns over time to see what creates these health emergencies in populations. And I think that can be very helpful to inform policy. It's very helpful to local and state and even national stakeholders to think about how the built environment can impact health. So we've translated that. A long-term project here is there was a local industrial polluter who was convicted of violating the Clean Air Act, and those fines are going to research studies. So ensuring the relevance and reach in a most rigorous way of that research study has been an exciting project. And that's opened the opportunity to work with some other communities to look at how do we objectively gather information when a community has, they're usually symptom clusters, and that's a place where nursing research is expert. So you have community members, there's some concern, there's some local wisdom that there's worsening health effects. But it'll manifest in some people as a higher susceptibility to sinus infections, in others because they already have maybe a chronic respiratory disease, it worsens their disease. Or in others, this really diffuses maybe headaches and stomach aches. So working with these communities to try to systematically and objectively empower them to have the tools to measure their own environment. In one case, it's the formaldehyde level in their homes. In another case, it's a mobile pollution source and trying to look at health symptoms and health diaries and how to work with existing regulatory agencies or research infrastructure to measure those exposures. So we're continuing that, and now we're working in several states to try to continue that process and really empower this, what tends to be a lay wisdom of there's something not right in my community, there's a lot of illnesses, and how do we start to get that attention to maybe a pocket of health effects, what's most effective to measure, or how does that impact our indoor environment where we have a whole host of other exposures, you know, whether it's from the products we use or how our home is built. So that brings it down to that personal level. Clinically, the chronic disease that is absolutely most attributable, has the highest attributable burden to the environment, is asthma. And so when I'm looking at clinical studies and original data collection, asthma is my focus. There are many occupational exposures, especially for women, but also the lung development in childhood and the risk for increased asthma has so many ties to the environment, particularly with specific genetic risks. So we've looked at wearable technology. We looked at some wearables as to how do we get ahead and have an early alert to an asthma exacerbation, or how do we put sensors in the home to find out if there's an increased exposure or risk. And that links to an older project that we just had published as well, where we've actually put wearables on emergency healthcare providers to look at how stressors in their work environment impacted their delivery of care. So it was a nice way to tie back to a project that we started about 7 years ago and now link it to the patient environment for someone with asthma. So all of these projects do tend to use big data and data analytics in trying to really tease out this environmental determinant of health.
Super interesting. Two follow-up questions. Can you comment on occupational asthma for nurses?
Oh, yes. I think it's not well known that healthcare providers are one of the highest risk for new claims for work-related asthma. So a couple of factors in the literature that tie back to that. And one is, do you remember when we had the latex gloves all the time and that powder in the gloves?
You bet.
So a lot of the theory ties back to just how often many of us, you know, we're going back almost a decade now, had that in our work environment constantly for so long. Add to that, the other theory is because custodial staff and janitors are the other very high-risk group, that it may be related to the use of cleaning environment, you know, particularly cleaning sprays and perhaps using them without a mask. So... But yes, we are, and that includes nursing assistants, but those who provide direct health care are some of the highest risk for developing occupational asthma.
Thank you.
Work exacerbated and work-related asthma, they are different things. So you may have pre-existing asthma, and then it's worsened because of your work. So we'll go with the broader category of work-related asthma.
Thank you. My other follow-up really has to do with something on my mind these days, which is wildfires. I live in the Rocky Mountains, and lots of forest here, and lots of fires in the past decade, especially in 2017, just a horrific season of incredibly high particulate counts for an extended period, about a six-week period. So we know of, you know, increased admissions to the hospital, increased problems for anybody who's vulnerable in terms of their respiratory status, but also other issues. I believe that the Forest Service has been doing some work with wearables for the firefighters, but I just wondered if you had anything to share with us about wildfire smoke. I'm not suggesting that's your area of expertise, but.
Well, I'll share what I do know and how it's relevant. And if you'd like to follow up, I'd be happy to connect you with some individuals in my network who do study that very specific area. So what we do know from the literature is we tend to enjoy in North America lower particulate matter counts than other places, say China. However, there is no established safe dose of particulate matter. We've seen recently, even at very low levels, that there is an influence on mortality, particularly in older adults. So what we experience every day in particular actually has a steeper mathematical slope with mortality in older adults. So you add to that this type of assault from wildfires. Some of the newer literature that teases out the component of the particulate matter does demonstrate more harmful effects tend to be with things like black carbon, the components of diesel exhaust, but a wildfire doesn't always stick to the trees. You can have an interaction with an industrial facility where there's damage or releases. You have homes and the plastics in those homes as they burn. And so in extrapolating the evidence we have, those are where you have some increased and unique health risks is when some of the human-made chemicals interact with the wildfire. Of course, there's the occupational equipment and the respirators that the firefighters wear, but not everyone downwind of that can wear it. So those air quality alerts and the known evidence shows that people with pre-existing cardiovascular disease risk and respiratory risk should really be cautious about going outdoors. It's a good opportunity to just start looking into air filtration and other ways in which to minimize your own risk. And the HEPA masks in going outdoors if you need to are an option, although the evidence on that, from what I've read, is a bit mixed. I hope that helps to answer your question.
Yes, thank you so much. I wanted to ask you if there was something you'd like to say to nurses, either about environmental health or about this terrific research trajectory that you've chosen.
Certainly. I welcome the of nursing specialty, practice, research, and expertise. I think we do have something incredibly unique to offer with our systems thinking, our holistic training, and our ability to really think through what's going on with disease and well-being back to an environmental determinant of health. I want to really encourage nurses who are interested in this, whether you're a practicing nurse or you have a background in nursing and you're, you know, on to management and other, even another industry, that linking together through an organization like Annie or the association or continuing to represent and be an ambassador for nursing expertise in the interdisciplinary environment really does help all of us and highlights the incredible impact that we can have. I think it's the most trusted profession that comes with a responsibility, as does our ethics and our social contract, you know, even our scope and standards. This absolutely needs to be a part of what all of us do. I think it is, but I often think it gets lost in our conversations with some other, you know, perhaps the soft skills of nursing, or what I say is the virtue dialogue of nursing. There's a lot of scientific and practice expertise in environmental health, and it's thrilling to be able to lead the charge to highlight that, because I think we can make an impact unlike many other disciplines.
Terrific. That's inspiring. I also wonder, just to follow up, this is getting toward my last question for you because I've taken enough of your time, but you mentioned early on identifying communities and their suspected issues with health and environmental health. In follow-up to that, is there anything that you'd like to say to community members around the world or around our nation about feeling empowered or how they might get started in addressing some of those concerns?
Well, sure. I think that every community has its own norms, cultures, and values. And there are publicly available tools. One is the Toxic Release Inventory, where anyone can look up what's happening what those permitted releases are in their own environment, or look at some of the brownfield databases and the Superfund databases to understand some of the legacy waste. So our government provides this information to us. For the most part, it's very accessible to the layperson. I usually work with communities that self-identify they are ready for action. And my role is to help provide processes to objectively collect evidence, whether that's evidence about exposure and evidence about health symptoms and health reactions. But the desire to work together, the desire to respectfully integrate this across different sectors and gather that stakeholder buy-in from local businesses, their local civic leaders, nonprofit groups, that has to be done in a careful and coordinated fashion. This, unfortunately, there's a lot of fears that come with environmental health, and it can become an unnecessarily adversarial relationship, where I think communities who really focus on that common goal, on improving both, you know, it's not a false choice between economic and environmental health, but improving both at the same time and moving forward together are often situated for success. Now, acknowledging there are sometimes those players that don't act accountable until you have the evidence there to hold them accountable. It is really rewarding to work with communities who are really committed to doing this in a multi-sector way. And that takes a lot of extra time, but does tend to have a really high impact.
Great. That's a nice wrap up. Jessica, is there anything else you'd like to add today before we sign off?
No, I just really have admired, well, I guess I said no, but the answer is yes. I really admire your work that you're doing in the hospital sector, Beth. And I think that you are an excellent example of where you are developing that economic argument for hospital administrators about how important green and sustainability is. I know here, linked to sort of the predicted health effects of climate change, our severe weather can impact the bottom line of hospitals and making sure that we're disaster prepared and ready. So thank you for the piece that you do in this chain of moving us forward together.
Yeah, thank you. That's kind of you to say. Yeah, we have endless work cut out for us, don't we? Well, thank you so much. It's been a true pleasure to talk with you, and I'm sure that our listeners would have many, many questions about your fascinating work.
Thank you.
And to the listeners, thank you for listening today to the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast. Check us out at Environ, ENVIRN.org. And please leave a review for us wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks, and talk to you next time.